Thank you very much for coming out this evening, making time for our tribute to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein on his 80th birthday. We're grateful to Yeshivat Or Chaim for making the space available, and in particular to Jay Shiel for his help in providing us with the equipment we need for the program tonight. And our program is fairly straightforward. I'll be presenting introductory remarks, and then Rav Baruch Weintraub will present the keynote shiur, and that'll be followed by a short video. It's actually a combination of two videos that run for 10 minutes, and we'll describe those briefly before we run those. And then there are light refreshments outside afterwards. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was born in France in 1933 to a father who was actually a German Orthodox rabbi who also held a doctorate, and a mother who was a graduate of the Yavne School in Telz. Came to the United States. I actually learned over Shabbos that he first lived in Clarksdale, Mississippi, when he arrived. But his parents felt that they needed more for him Jewishly, and so they decided to move east. And his mother arranged for him to study under Rav Yitzchak Huttner of Yeshivas Chaim Berlin, as well as under Rav Soloveitchik of YU, and he received smicha from YU. He married Rav Soloveitchik's daughter Tova in 1960. They have six children, Kananahara. He also attended Harvard University, where he earned a PhD in English literature, served as a Rosh Yeshiva at YU, as well as a professor of English there until 1971, when he answered the call of Rav Yehuda Amital to join him as a Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshivat Har Etzion, the Gush, in Israel. And Rav Lichtenstein retains his connection to YU, serving as well as a Rosh Kolel at YU's Grus Kolel in Yerushalayim. Beyond the bio, though, I just wanted to present a few words about the impact of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein on the Jewish world. I'm in an odd position standing here, in the sense that I'm not a Talmud of Rav Aaron. I heard a shiur from him once, and that was over 20 years ago. And yet, I've been profoundly impacted by Rav Aaron and his teachings, his Torah, in many different ways. Rav Aaron, I think of Rav Aaron as what the Gemara calls Ish HaEshkolot. The Gemara at the end of Sota says that we have lost the Eshkolot. And Eshkol is a bunch of fruit, usually Eshkol Anavim, a bunch of grapes. And the Gemara says they're all gone. We don't have the Eshkolot anymore. So what are these Eshkolot? So Rav Menachem Meiri writes, Eshkol hu mashal al ish nichlelu bo shlemut hamidot ushlemut hachochmot kulam. Eshkol is a reference to somebody who has all of the different types of wisdom, as well as all of the different personality traits, a perfected character and a perfected mind. It's a fascinating description for the Meiri to use, because that's the Rambam's description in the 7th chapter of Shmona Prakim of what it takes to be a Navi, what it takes to be a prophet. You have to perfect your knowledge, and you have to perfect your personality. And it very much suits, without talking about Nevuah, but in general, it suits the role that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein fills in our Jewish world. First of all, his Shlemut, his complete Chachma, his complete wisdom. His positions have the intellectual legitimacy that comes with positions stated by someone who is really a full, well-rounded Talmud Chacham. Expert in sources in Gemara, in Halacha, in Machshava, Jewish law, as well as Jewish thought. Can give a shiur in deep iyun, deep, deep analysis in yeshiva to students of the highest level. And he can also paskin, he can present rulings in practical Halacha in wildly disparate areas. So that, you know, in preparing this, I just did a search on my computer through shiurim that I've given and to see where I've quoted him. And the topics range really broadly. A shiur on Yom Tov Sheni for someone who's not from Israel, who's in Israel. Shiur on kashering an oven from meat to dairy and whether one needs two ovens or can manage with one oven. Surrogate, motherhood. He manages to deal at the highest level in all of these various topics, and his knowledge, I mentioned before, his PhD in English, but it's not just having the doctorate. He's so versed in general knowledge and the arts as well. That's all in terms of chachma, in terms of wisdom. But the same perfection applies when it comes to his moral authority. He has a fantastic understanding of the minds of men, and can communicate articulately in their language. If you open up any of his essays in Leaves of Faith, it's really striking the way that he can convey ideas. He thinks creatively to understand how to apply older sources to our current situation. So when he writes about harming civilians in wartime, dealing with wars in Gaza, he'll quote you the Rambam, and he'll quote you the Ramban's commentary to the Torah, and he'll show you how it applies to our world today. Ditto for his way of dealing with the questions of surrogate motherhood. But he also brings to it a very simple honesty. You know, there was an article in the Jerusalem Post's website a while back about an address he gave on the issues facing the homosexual community within the Jewish world. And he says one imperative that he calls upon rabbis for is to be, I'm quoting from him, fairer and more honest with ourselves and with our communities. He says you have to have honesty, and he puts that as one of the primary values. He's patient. He doesn't demand a resolution to all problems. He doesn't force himself to take a stance on issues which are unclear. And his humility is well known. This is the Ish HaEshkolot, and I really see him as unique in representing the values of the, talking since we're the Yeshiva University, Torah Mitzion, Beit Midrash Zichron Do, so he represents the values of Yeshiva University and of Torah Mitzion in one. We have figures who are articulate. Thank God our world is blessed with people like Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Rabbi Yisrael Lau, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman. We have figures who are worldly in their knowledge and can speak to many spheres. Rabbi Meir Yaakov Soloveitchik, Rabbi Dr. David Berger, Rabbi Sacks again, frankly. We have figures who are halachic authorities. We have Rabbi Herschel Schefter. We have Rabbi Dr. Avraham Sofer Avraham. The Ish HaEshkolot, though, excels in filling all of these roles together. There is much more that I could say, but these really are meant to be introductory remarks. My knowledge of Avaron, as I said at the beginning, is really ultimately from the Torah he's taught that I've read, as opposed to Torah that I've heard firsthand. And so what I'd like to do is turn this over now to Rabbi Baruch Weintraub. For the past 20 months, our Beis Medrash and the city of Toronto have been privileged to host a Talmud of Avaron's yeshiva of the Gush. Someone who, in his own right, is a spectacular Talmud Chacham, a creative thinker, and remarkably articulate in English as well as Hebrew. And it's been a thrill to be able to work with him, and it's great to be able to have him here to present a shiur on Rav Aaron Lipinstein.
Thank you, Rabbi Tolchina. If I thought for a second that the first compliments about being creative and Talmid Chacham were right, then when he said that I also articulate myself excellent in English, I knew that everything was the same, in the same level of truth as that. Thank you so much for coming. And I begin every shiur, I try to begin every shiur with thanking the people for coming. But truth is that this event is exciting me much more than other shiurim. And as Rabbi Tolchina has mentioned, I had the privilege of learning in the last 10 years in Yeshivat Gush, 6 of them directly under Rabbi Lichtenstein. In the other 4 part of the year that I was in the army, then I learned by students of Rabbi Lichtenstein or by his son. And obviously, the Gemara in Baba Metzia has different definitions of how do we define Rabbo Muvhak, is true rabbi. And there are different definitions. I would say that almost all of them, in my perspective, Rabbi Lichtenstein is answering. So I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity, the ability, to at least pay a little tribute of what I feel my debt to him by the ability to speak some of his Torah to you. So thank you again. What I would like to speak about in this shiur is the question of how should a Talmid Chacham look like, and specifically speaking about what we tend to see as our community. It has different names. I would call it in the broader name now of the modern Orthodox community, although there are other names, centrist more Orthodox or religious Zionist or any other name that you would like to call it. And in this short lecture, I would like to achieve maybe, three different goals. One is to speak about the ideas of Rabbi Lichtenstein. The other is to use some examples how Rabbi Lichtenstein himself and his personality expresses what I see, what I hope that you'd also see as the model of a Rabbi, of a Talmid Chacham in our community. And the third is, which is going to be the more challenging, I think, is I try to build the shiur as I would understand that Rabbi Lichtenstein himself would give the shiur. The only thing that I won't follow up his example is that I am not going to speak for an hour and a half. Why is it so important to speak about the figure of a Talmid Chacham? Who is the Talmid Chacham? And why it is so important when we speak directly about, as I said earlier, the modern Orthodox community? Rabbi Lichtenstein, more than once, has stated that one of the major differences differentiating between the more right wing of Orthodoxy and the more, again, central wing of it, is the question of the authority of a Talmid Chacham. What exactly is the position of a Talmid Chacham, and what does he give? And that is for two major reasons. The first reason is an historical one. As we all know, a great number of Talmid Chachamim, of great Talmid Chachamim, in the last generations, were openly opposed to modernity. And that is something that even when, oh Hashem, we have our own rabbis and our own Gdolei Torah that we can follow, and yet we have to openly acknowledge and admit that that is the case. And that to itself, recognizing that there are Gdolim who do not think as we, and that we do not follow their example, but other Gdolim example, and yet that we do not follow some of the big rabbi's example, that to itself is affecting our view of Talmidei Chachamim. That's an historical reason. Further than that, there is also, I would say, an internal reason, or in the language of Rabbi Lichtenstein, I would say, an inherited reason to why there is a difference between how a Talmid Chacham is perceived in the more modern wing of Orthodoxy. And that is because modernity itself, part of its essence, has taught us that personal autonomy and the ability to judge for ourselves is critical for the ability to be considered as moral agents. I spoke this morning in TCS, in H. Thornhill, and I had the merit to speak about liberty and freedom and ideas that we can learn from Pesach. And I mentioned that Kant, one of the big philosophers of the Enlightenment movement, someone that we can say is one of the people that articulated what the idea of modernity is. Well, he said that someone cannot be considered as a moral agent if he does not act out of his free decision, free will. If someone does not make the decision how to act himself, he is not a moral agent, regardless of the act he takes. And these ideas, without right now weighing or trying to judge how much they are consistent with Jewish ideas, but these ideas also affect us, affect the way that we see ourselves, affect the way that we see how our decisions process should be. We give much more room for personal autonomy, and that again reflects on the way that we see Talmidei Chachamim and the role that they play in our society. For these two reasons, says Rabbi Lichtenstein, the way that we perceive Talmidei Chachamim, and for that reason, the way that they should act, is greatly different between the more right wing and the more modern wing of Orthodoxy. As I said earlier, I would like to build this lecture or shiur in a similar way to how I believe Rabbi Lichtenstein would build it. And I would even want to use some of the phrases that he is using. Do not suspect that I know English literature. Everything that would be given now, I heard from him. Rabbi Lichtenstein quotes many times an article that was written, a piece that was written by F.H. Bradley, called My Station and Its Duties. My Station and Its Duties. And that article is speaking about the question of how one should know, how one should judge what is his duties, what is his moral commands that he should need to carry out in this world. And as you can hear from the title, then the way to define your role, the way to define your goal is by your role. My station and its duties. The place that I take in society defines to me at least a major part of my moral commandments. The Talmid Chacham in our community should understand what his station is, what he should aspire to, how he can inspire the people, our people, to advance. And because of that, the question of what is a Talmid Chacham only gets more important in our days. So, what are the qualifications that we expect a Talmid Chacham to show? What deeds he should take? What do we expect from him? So Rav Lichtenstein again likes to quote Matthew Arnold, which I have no idea who is he. But he says, I'm joking. But he says that when you look upon something, when you try to understand something, you cannot begin from the middle. In his own words, you must see life steadily and see it whole. Meaning, when we discuss a certain subject, it should be viewed from beginning to the end, which is Lichtenstein's expertise. So when we speak about a Talmid Chacham, we cannot begin with the question what a Talmid Chacham is. What we should begin with is the question what a human being is. What are the duties? What do we expect from a human being? Then we can ask what do we expect from a human being that happens to be a Jew. And then from a Jew that happens to be a Ben Torah, and only then we can ask, so what do we expect from this elite group of human beings, Jews, Bnei Torah, that are also Talmidei Chachamim? That's the way that Rabbi Lichtenstein begins his both his book and these were Shiurim in Har Etzion about what a Ben Torah is. And he begins with the question, if you want to know what a Ben Torah is, you first must ask yourself what a human being is. So what a human being is? A human being is someone that is commanded, as the Torah says in Sefer Bereshit, Le'ovda u'le'shomra, to work and to preserve, to create and to keep, to guard. Le'ovda u'le'shomra. This is the basic definition of the missions that each one of us is assigned to. Le'ovda u'le'shomra. To advance, but yet to hold. Rav Lichtenstein emphasized many times that when we speak about the Jewish covenant, Brit Sinai, we do not speak about something that completely diminishes, annihilates our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as human beings. It's a second floor. It's an addition. It's not replacing. The same content that we will find in human relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should also find with a true relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only with an addition. He uses, in order to give an example, in order to prove, if you want, He using a Gemara. A few times the Gemara says that it cannot be that something that is also that is forbidden to a goy, to a non-Jew, would be permitted, would be allowed to a Jew. The Gemara says it cannot be. Why it cannot be? Because of that point, says Rav Lichtenstein. That we as Jews, our covenant with God is built upon the foundations of the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to humanity. And again, these words are Le'ovda u'le'shomra. So what is the meaning of Le'ovda u'le'shomra? So one might think that Le'ovda is very simple. We should participate in the creation, as Chazal are phrasing it, we need to be shutaf b'maaseh bereshit. We walk, I wouldn't say it if it's not being said in the Gemara, we walk shoulder to shoulder with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in advancing, in finalizing the creation, in perfecting this world. So that is Le'ovda, to advance, to create. We can understand that quite easily, I think. But what about Le'shomra, to preserve? So one might think that Le'shomra is a very passive role. Le'shomra. So we need to take care that things won't get damaged, won't get worse. Rabbi Lichtenstein is using here a very interesting Gemara, this time from Baba Metzia. There is an interesting contradiction between the Gemara in Baba Metzia, Daf Bet Amud Aleph, and somewhere in the end, in Daf Kuf Chet. The Gemara in Daf Bet states that, let's imagine a situation. I'm walking on the street with my friend near me, and then we see, say, a new iPod on the floor, on the road. And he runs to it. But I am saying, no, I don't have to run. I saw it first. By seeing it, that is enough in order to make me the owners. Who is right? Well, I would have to go to Apple Store and spend some of my money. Because just seeing an object is not enough in order to buy it. Or in the Gemara language, Habata behefker ena kona. Looking at an object is not enough in order to buy it, in order to acquire it. Simple enough. But the Gemara in Daf Kuf Chet, on the other hand, says that, let's say again, the same story, but this time I was alone. I was walking on the street and I see this new electrical device, but I'm not just seeing it. I am guarding it. I am keeping it. Now, I do not touch the object, but I am walking around. I am looking to see that no one come. In that instance, the Gemara says, Habata behefker kona. Although I didn't touch the object, I didn't raise it, yet I become to be its owner. The Rishonim ask that that's a contradiction. I just said in Daf Bet that looking upon an object is not enough in order to buy, to acquire it. So how can it be that just keeping it is enough? Rabbi Lichtenstein likes to quote here the Tosfot Rit, saying that there is a difference between a passive looking and to guard, to keep. Because when you look on something, not just because you want it, but you look on it because you are afraid to its existence, if you take responsibility over it as the guard, then even just looking is an active act. I would steal now 3 minutes from your time saying another word here which I think that is important. It goes on the same lines. We know that one of the arguments to permit someone to violate Shabbat, to be mechalel Shabbat in order to save life, is chalel alav Shabbat achad. You should violate one Shabbat in order to gain, to benefit the many Shabbatot that he would be able to keep later. Now that's not the sole reason, there are other reasons as well, but that is one of them. The reason behind it is because, as we just read in last parsha, we have been assigned with the mission of Shmirat Shabbat, keeping the Shabbat. Now, Shmirat Shabbat, one might think, mean I need to make sure that I won't violate the Shabbat. But no. When I was assigned with the responsibility of keeping the Shabbat, this responsibility itself sometimes allow me to violate the Shabbat in order in the future to gain more. And the example here by Lichtenstein is using is Shomer Perot. We know that someone that is a guard of foods, in a case that they are rotting, he is allowed to sell them so the owners won't lose all of his foods. So at least if I would sell them before they all rot, then at least half or three quarters of the money would be preserved. So because I am the keeper, I even have the ability to sell the foods. When we speak about Leshomra, we do not speak about passively sitting, idling, not doing anything. When we speak about Leshomra, even when we speak about preserving, we speak about an active role that we should take upon ourselves, a responsibility on our shoulders to preserve the ideas that we believe in, the ideas that were given to us by our tradition in Mesorah. And that is a responsibility that does not call us to sit idle, but call us to raise from our seats and act. So these are the missions of a human being. And when we move over, to who is, what are the missions that are set upon a Jew, or what are the missions that set upon a Ben Torah, then the same missions that we just spoke about, only refined, redefined maybe, we would refer to. So what are the missions of a Talmid Chacham? Looking from these perspectives, of Leovda, to work, to create, to advance and to improve, maybe even to perfect, and Leshomra, to hold ground, to keep, to guard, and to preserve. Rabbi Lichtenstein, by the way, would use at least 8 words that mean the same, right, in that sentence. The Talmid Chacham is obligated on one way, on one hand, to take the Torah that he received, to advance it, to open new paths, to create new worlds, to lead his students after him to new places, and on the other hand, is also assigned with the enormous responsibility of Leshomra, of not losing what the Talmidei Chachamim from earlier generations has handed us. And that mission of balancing, between these two edges, between these two scales, is a very difficult one. Everyone that knows Rabbi Lichtenstein, I think, knows that in his personality, he incorporates these two qualities. On the one hand, the ability to run away, to create, and to advance. But on the other hand, is meticulous about details, about how exactly was the Torah given, what exactly was said to him by Rabbi Soloveitchik, for example, when he would give a shiur, what exactly did he answer, what was the question. It's not only in the shiurim. One of the best examples, I think, to this ability of Rabbi Lichtenstein to balance between Leovda and Leshomra, and I hope that you'll forgive me for using this example, I saw not in the Beit Midrash, but in the stairs leading to the Beit Midrash. Rabbi Lichtenstein, Minhag, is when he would finish his shiur, and there would be a seder, as always in the Bet Midrash, he wouldn't just go ascend in the stairs, right, as our mortals as us are doing, going step by step. He would run, he would hop two stairs at one leap, a leap of faith, we call that. But on the other hand, while he's running forward, under his arms, he would hold all the books that he's taking with him to the Bet Midrash, just to see how he balances, right? These books, the care about the books, and the wish, the will, the desire to run forward into the Bet Midrash. And again, I would excuse me for using this example, but that's not less a lesson, at least for me, than the lesson that I received in the Bet Midrash.
This balance between, again, Leovdai and Neshomra, which in other terms might also be defined as, in Mesirat Yesharim terms, which I also had the merit to learn from Rabbi Lichtenstein. He gave a shiur at least in my, when I was there, every Sunday in Mesilat Yesharim. So in Mesilat Yesharim terms, the words would be Zehirut, being careful, Leshomra, and Zrizut, Leovda, to go forward. Zehirut and Zrizut. And this ability to hold both is a very unique one. But even when we speak about having this double commitment of preserve and advance, yet we have to ask ourselves, these are very broad terms. But in the end, practically speaking, what should a Talmid Chacham focus on? How should it look like? What do we expect again from our Talmid Chacham? On a little different voice, I would say, if we speak about Leovda uleShomra, then what is the gun, what is the garden that the Talmid Chacham is assigned with Leovda uleShomra? It might be that some would say that the Talmid Chacham role, his objective is Rul Halacha, to be a posek. Of course, it's a very important role, but Rav Lichtenstein does not see it as the main role of a Talmid Chacham. I would just say that when I had two times I went with him with a question in Halacha, later on I went to some of the other rabbis in Yeshiva. It was three times. In the first time, then he told me that he would be back, he would get back to me. I went over a few weeks after, and then he sent me to Rav Amital. On the second time, he did wanted to answer me, but what he did was to send me to the Yerushalmi, where I would find the answer. Ruling Halacha is not necessarily the main role of a Talmid Chacham. Rav Lichtenstein brings here as an example that Reb Chaim Mibrisk, or Reb Chaim Ozer Gozhinsky, and we speak only if that's examples from last generation, they had their own Dayanim, Poske Halacha, they brought with them to be a Posek. So what is the main role of a Talmid Chacham? Here Rav Lichtenstein brings the definition of the Shofet, the judge, as it's being brought in Sefer HaMitzvot, in the Book of Commandments, to Rambam. And there Rambam says the following. המצווה הקופה אין וב, this mitzvah that we speak about, שציוונו למנות שופטים ושוטרים, we are supposed to appoint judges and cops and policemen, and what the role is, שיחריחו לעשות מצוות התורה, ויחזירו הנוטים מדרך האמת, they would force people to keep the way of Torah, they would retain people that stayed away, ויצבו לעשות הטוב, they would command on the good, ויזהירו על הרע, and they would warn people from going astray on the bad ways. Meaning, the role of a Talmid Chacham is not necessarily to rule on a specific question, but to serve as, we may say, a lighthouse to the public, to be involved in public policy,
to help people as people, as a group, as a public, to hold to Derech HaEmet, to the path of truth, and to refrain and to prevent themselves from going into the wrong way. And then, Rishon is doing a very interesting move. He says, if we do learn the role of a Talmid Chacham from the Shofet, then we can also learn what should be, how a Talmid Chacham should be from the Shofet. Because the Shoftim, as the Torah says, are stationed in the city gates. Bish'arecha. Why should they be in the city gates? Bish'arecha. Why is it so important? And some of us may answer that is important because justice should not only be done, but also to be seen. But there might be another answer as well. And that is that the Talmid Chacham should sit, the Shofet should sit in the city gates, not only for other people to see him, but also for him to see other people. Because if someone wants to be a public leader, he must know the public. If someone wants to lead a nation, he must be part of it. If someone wants to be a Talmid Chacham, he must be Me'orav Bedat Im Habriyot. He must be someone that understands, that is mixed with other people. And that is one of the major points that Rav Lichtenstein emphasized in his teaching, as well in his way of life. In his teachings, as you know, Rabbi Lichtenstein wrote, shortly after coming to Eretz Israel, an article that had a great impact on the Dati Leumi, the religious Zionist society in Eretz Israel, which was called Zot Torat HaEsder, the theory of Esder. And there, Rabbi Lichtenstein explained why does he think that serving in the army is so important for a young Ben Torah. And he did not speak about the question, whatever the state of Israel is, Reshit Tzmichat Geulateinu. What he spoke about was, if we want to create Talmidei Chachamim, they must be part of society. And if part of society, the aspect of chesed, of kindness, is to be involved in the army, then that's what we should do. But it's not only in his teaching. I will tell you now a story that I heard in the yeshiva. We all in yeshiva knew it, until a few years ago, in a Hanukkah party, we asked Rabbi Lichtenstein if it's a true story, and he said it's not. Nonetheless, it's so a good story that I will tell it anyway. The story says that in Milchemet Yom Kippur, Rabbi Lichtenstein decided that he cannot stay in yeshiva and learn, but he should volunteer, not to the army, he was already after the age, so he volunteered to what we would call today a civil service, Shirut Leumi. And they assigned him the mission of giving milk in Jerusalem. Giving milk to people. Because I guess that they recruited the people that were assigned to that. And the story goes that one day, Rabbi Lichtenstein is knocking on the door, and he delivers the milk, and the receiver was Rabbi Zsolti in Jerusalem. So Rabbi Zsolti spoke with him a few words, and he saw it's a great Talmid Chacham. And then Rabbi Zsolti said, if these are the milk deliverers of Jerusalem, who knows who the rabbis are? The story is incorrect, as I said. But nonetheless, as every great story, even if it's not true, it shows you what is the essence of the man that such a story could be created about. This role of kindness, of chesed, and the way that Rabbi Lichtenstein is expressing it is in his personality, I think is at least half of the impact that he gives upon the students in Yeshiva Gush. So a Talmid Chacham, with his mission of Leovda uleShomra, should invest himself, engage the problems that face current society, and from within society to advance and to preserve the values that we believe in. And yet, I want to end in a personal note. And it was personal till I found that Rav Lichtenstein himself, in Leaves of Faith, which, to tell you the truth, I learned from Rabbi Lichtenstein himself. So to the book Leaves of Faith, in a more serious way, I was just acknowledged in the last few weeks when I was preparing to this shiur. So this personal note I found later is being written explicitly in one of his articles there. But let me speak. So the role of a Talmid Chacham does not end with, as I said, setting policy for the public. Each one of us that was close to a great man knows that the impact upon individuals is great. When you see greatness, that enables you to understand that there is something that is much higher than the limits that you can see things. One can read text, one can read Gemara, but as long as one does not acknowledge that there are people that are much broader than him, that I would even say, risking here maybe a little exaggeration, they are on different spiritual plane than him, one does not understand how to read text. Because one would always apply to the text his own personality. But when you see that there can be people that are really excelled, elevated, then you begin to realize, you begin to understand that there are planes of existence, that it might be that you are not there. You can aspire to, you should aspire to, but you are not there. And humbleness is the first step to advance yourself. Knowing and understanding that there is what to advance to, and that you are not perfect yet, is the first step in perfecting. Rav Lichtenstein quotes Whitehead, saying that the role of a leader in a society is to supply a vision of greatness. A vision of greatness. Rabbi Lichtenstein himself, as I said earlier, wrote an article, a very interesting one, and a short one, speaking about the sources of belief. I think it's a question that each one of us is facing in educating others, but what is more important, in educating himself. What are the sources of belief? From where can we draw belief? Where is the well that from it we can take the water of emunah? And Rabbi Lichtenstein speaks there about philosophical proofs and other historical proofs. But in the end he says, there is only one real true source of belief, and that is faith itself. The source of faith is faith. Whose faith? Your rabbi's faith. By seeing someone, your rabbi, a great man, really a great man, with a true belief, a true faith, a faithful trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you yourself are being loaded with true, real, honest faith. And this is not a philosophical answer. Someone that has doubts, it might be, and I'm just speaking here, won't be answered by this answer. But someone that would spend the time, to invest the time, to be in the same place with a vision of greatness, I think, would acknowledge, and you don't need 10 years for that, that this is the main role of a Talmid Chacham. His ability to inspire us as individuals about what can be achieved. His ability to be, as again, a beacon, a lighthouse for us, far, maybe in the dark, but looking ahead, seeing this light and knowing that there is, and it might be that we would choose our own path of sailing. But there is a light to aspire to. There is something to forward to advance to. And again, Rav Littleton himself serves, I think, in this manner, not only as a teacher that can bring to me this line of whitehead, of a vision of greatness, but more than that, as a teacher that for me, and it might be also that far for some of the people that sitting here in this room, served as a real life lighthouse to help them navigate through the difficulties of life. And I would like to finish here, again, with a line from an English poet, and this time is one that is very well loved by Rav Lichtenstein, Faust. And he said, I was feeling that I need to finish with a line like that, because after all, Chas v'chalila, that's not an hespet, right? We're speaking about someone that is alive, working with full capacity, and someone might think that if I described, then maybe that is the end of where someone can get. But not Rabbi Lichtenstein, who is always advancing and walking. Or as the song says, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. Thank you.